Yeah, buddy. People going to feel like that this afternoon when the weather gets up in the 60s.
Yep.
We've been waiting for that. Sam and Greg, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Take us with you on the Odyssey app on this Sunday morning, February the 2nd, Groundhog's Day. Good morning, Georgia.
Morning.
And a good morning to all y'all in, you ready? Silver City.
Okay.
You know about Silver City, right? Come on, you know about Silver City. It's unincorporated, yeah, but it's up there, you know. It's Dawson and Forsyth counties kind of up in that general area.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, Silver City, it's unincorporated community, but that's in that general area up there.
Okay.
It's, anyway, we're going to honor them. They got some folks up there.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Well, you know what? If they're in Dawson, that's up near Dawsonville, and as we think about
it. See how I teed that up for you?
And as we think today, as they run the clash tonight up at Bowman Gray Stadium, and Adam Alexander's on his way. We're going to talk to him later on this hour. Chase Elliott is on the pole for this race tonight. If he wins, you know, this thing is going to finish around probably around 10 o'clock. It's going to be dark at night. But that siren from the pool room will come on.
If he wins.
If he wins.
If he wins.
And that'll wake everybody up. but yeah, that's what the tradition for members of the Elliott family, be it either Chase or when his dad would win. They're at the pool room. They just
every time you say that, I think of my cousin Vinny.
Why you say that?
You seen that movie? That one part where him and his girl come down south here to Alabama, and they stayed at a couple different places, but something comes up, and then they end up having to leave there. And so they're in the hotel. They go to the hotel, and the guy says, you know, what time is... I forgot what it was. But anyway, the alarm, something goes off. either a train, I think it was either the train, something noise, or something noise pops at like 5 o'clock. And he goes down to the guy at the front desk and says, "What's going on here?" He goes, "Oh, that's the whistle over there at the factory," or something like that.
Yeah.
And he goes, "You know, it goes off in the morning. Tell everybody it's time to get up." So every time you say that, I think of that scene.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sam and Greg on this Sunday morning came back with some BB. BB got his first number one hit on this day, 52, a song I don't think I know, but 3 o'clock blues.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've heard other people play it, but this was his version. His version went to number one.
Really?
Yeah. BB okay. King got his first number one hit on this day. So we thought we'd play some BB for you.
Nice.
On this. As you just mentioned, we have got Adam Alexander, friend of the show. Coming up next, and got a casting call later on, some money flying through the air. So we've been having some fun this morning.
We have been.
We came in here with some news. We came in here, and again, you know, sometimes we're the last, but this morning we were
the first ones to talk
about a monumental trade that took place yesterday, and we're going to just kind of kick around our thoughts on why it happened. Since it's so new, things will play out over the next couple days, and maybe we'll get more insight as to who orchestrated this. I have my thoughts on why, but if you don't know, Luka Doncic and Anthony Davis traded teams. I guess we can say yesterday, last night.
Last night.
Yeah, last night. The deal went down. Anthony Davis is, I don't know if he's officially on the IR, but he's been hurt. Luka Doncic.
There you go.
Doncic. There we go.
There you go.
You could talk about his foibles and how that has affected folks' management. Mark Cuban on down before he left his post, but still, the people with that organization, you know, you talk about him coming into camp, maybe out of shape a little bit, talk about his ball hogging thing.
Oh, yeah.
Is there enough time between him and Kyrie with the ball? But
because you wondered how that was going to work, too. You wondered how I was going to work with Kyrie going into that team. And they kind of made it work. You know?
Well, Kyrie pulled back on his game. That's why.
Right. But, I mean, you wondered how that was going to work in that place. But now, you know, Kyrie's going to have the ball all he wants, you know, and you want to see how that works with him. And like you said, the big part is Anthony Davis going to be healthy enough to be a factor and be consistent in the lineup with them? That's what everyone's assuming and hoping happens through this trade.
But now, before we dissect that, the thing that popped into your mind, bringing it locally, was you kind of worried a little bit because the Lakers lose a big man, albeit one that's regularly, you know, dealing with some injuries. But you feel like they are going to be searching for a big man, and you hope that they don't come east of the Mississippi,
yep.
Especially here to Atlanta.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and I'm concerned about Onyeka Okongwu because of what he means for this Hawks team and the way he has grown and matured, and now he's been inserted into the starting lineup. And they need someone with this Lakers team who does the things that he does, a young player who's still on the rise as far as it goes, a West Coast guy, played his college ball at Southern Cal. I could see him being someone that they would want to bring in and try to insert into that spot, because right now they're like a donut. They don't have anything in the middle for that team right now of substance, and they will need that if they want to be a contender. Right now they're in the 5 spot, and you know, in the conference, Dallas is in the 8 spot right now. So, as far as getting lined up for the playoffs, so while Davis will go over, and we'll see, because the one thing he did make a comment about is his desire to play the 4 instead of the 5. And he feels like maybe that was something that will, you know, as far as his health, you know, maybe playing the 4 rather than playing the 5. But that's what he's had to do is when he's with the Lakers. I don't know if he'll get to do that with Dallas or not, but I know that's something that he stated he felt like he would be more effective and be better if he could do that.
And it has been well known that LeBron has made it public that in NBA circles, and it's been repeated, that he wanted to play with Luka. He's been wanting to play with Luka, would love to. And so, and we've seen that from time to time where players talk about wanting to play with each other. We saw that train wreck in Brooklyn where KD wanted to play with Kyrie and then
Ben Simmons.
Yeah, Ben Simmons. By the way, is there a Ben Simmons sighting anytime soon?
Don't get me started on
that. So let's bring Noel into this. And as the dust has settled, we've had an hour or so plus since we've been on talking about this. What are your thoughts about this trade? And who's, you know, you take it where you want to take it. Wins, losers, overall, wherever you want to go.
I think CJ McCollum said it all when he said, got to pack them bags just in case. Now, if Luka Doncic get traded, Lord only knows. This is a new day in the NBA.
Yeah.
And whether I agree with, you know, what side or who won or whatever, this is kind of what I've been preaching about, getting out of antiquated team building ideas. And this is one way to do
it.
This is a super swing. This could reset the entire NBA as we know it. But sometimes that's what's needed to kind of get to the next level of player where we need to get to. I mean, just yesterday, Caleb Johnson right here on 929 The Game at around 1 o'clock was making the argument that sports needs dynasties. And that's kind of what the NBA is missing currently at the moment. And maybe a situation was just created for the Lakers to rebuild one. I don't know, but it's very compelling. This is, to me, what it screams the most is that any team can do anything, or any player can do anything right now. And it's kind of what Jimmy Butler was trying to do, but, you know. Mm-hmm.
He still will. He'll be out.
I mean, he will, but it's a lot messier there than just, you know, making the move. Because on this side, we're just focused on the trade of it all and that it happened and the composition and the compensation and the fact that it was even possible. But Pat Riley is old school.
Right,
we're talking about a new school form of thinking, and Pat Riley is cemented in whatever he was doing in the forum in 79. He is cemented over there, and he's not trying to move that kind of forward.
He sent the guy with a statue outside that place.
Oh, yeah.
He sent Dwayne Wade packing. He sent LeBron packing. So all bets are off when it comes to anybody. Jimmy Butler's got to know that.
Right, but you know, sometimes you feel like you're the one that's going to reset the whatever. And in this situation, I'm not so much saying that a player done that, but what just happened between the Mavs and the Lakers, it changes front office thinking and team building entirely, in my opinion. Like this was a huge domino to just fail.
I guess the question remains: who do you think instigated this? Which side?
Reports keep saying Mavs.
Yeah, they keep saying the Mavs. Mavs initiated.
So that says all you need to know about how they felt about Luka,
and that's how to get through to him.
See, I think it is. I think there's a blind spot with that dude and not seeing, not so much old school thinking, but you come in here like you just had a double cheeseburger as far as coming into camp.
I don't disagree. These are all the same things I've been saying, not even being in the Dallas market. This was the stuff I could see being afar, and I was astounded that we weren't hearing that much. But yet, here, You heard everything possible surrounding. So it's just a frustrating conversation to have to get to this side of it and now to have more concrete feeling, more concrete information that, yeah, all that stuff was going on.
Then I ask you this. What's the difference between that thinking before and now? There's one component. He had a billionaire that was protecting him, maybe from keeping all that noise going out of Dallas back then.
Well, and that's
but
what
Cuban
I'm saying.
Has stepped out of his seat.
Right. Cuban was attached to that pick. It's almost like when teams, you know, fire the coach or the general manager or whatever, and you bring new people in, and now all those people that were there are vulnerable to being axed because mm-hmm. I have no connection to you.
Yep.
And that's kind of what happened with this Luka. Now, I ain't draft that dude. I didn't lose a trade or yep. whatever. Right. None of that's on me. That's not. I didn't make that trade with Atlanta. Yep. I didn't whatever. That's not my business. So mm-hmm. if I don't want to pay the luxury tax, and that's what I'm hearing too, that his max contract had a lot to do with this decision, and that's what I'm saying. This is a big domino that's going to change front office thinking. But if that's also a part of it, then, yeah.
So if everything that you said and you believe that's the case, then nobody on the Hawks is safe.
No, I'm literally saying that. And I'm saying that on both sides. Like, this clears the way, specifically if we're going to talk Atlanta Hawks, they're no longer tied to that night. So this clears the way for the Hawks and or Trey to do whatever they want to.
Yeah.
And now that goes for all the other 28 teams too. But just looking at this team and the connection to that trade, like, because the Mark Cuban of it all is gone and Dallas made their break and made their trade, mm-hmm. Hawks are free. So they can make a move, and the optics are different. It's not, oh, you lost the trade. Why you make that trade all them years ago? We ain't getting nothing back, and y'all tried to make it work in the picks. Now you can do it, and those optics have changed.
To what Noel said and believes that the NBA thinks that they need another another dominant team, another
like Golden State.
Yeah, like Golden State,
right?
My question is that as important as getting a team – with the three superstars that traditionally has been the case of the
teams
winning.
I don't think the three guys anymore.
Yeah, I think that era
that's
might
gone, right?
Yeah,
so that's gone.
I think that's gone.
Okay. Because
you got all these European guys coming in, and they're, you know, they're at least really good utility guys that you're stashing on the bench and you're bringing in the, you know, shoot threes and slash or whatever. So now your bench has to be a little deeper.
So then that gets back to what Sam was saying about, well, then do the Lakers need a dude clogging up the middle?
Mm-hmm.
You got guys coming out, Wemby's 7 foot whatever, and he's out there shooting threes.
Yeah.
So the need for a traditional big man isn't the case as much anymore in the NBA.
Yes, there is.
You believe so?
Yeah, if you're going to be the team like Denver, yes. If you're going to be the team like
Milwaukee,
yes. I was
about to say, yeah, it's going to be style of basketball.
You're going to be the team like Philadelphia, yes. You're going to have that.
But no, you don't have Philadelphia because I ain't nobody scared of Embiid anymore.
Man,
I don't think they are. I just don't. But your point is taken with the other
right,
two.
Right. You got to have somebody like that if you're going to win it.
I'm sorry. As you said that, and I was thinking of Milwaukee, you think of Giannis.
Oh, Giannis.
And he went after Chris Paul. He went after the shortest dude on the court the other day because he got in his skin. He went after Chris Paul.
Well, that's what Chris Paul does.
Yeah.
He's from that John Stockton school,
Forest.
Man.
That's just what Chris Paul does.
They do that, man. Them little dudes you got to watch out for. Because, man, John Stockton used to get under everybody's nerves doing that. And you think, oh, that's the choir boy. He would never play like that.
Oh, yeah, right.
Anytime he's got his finger in all that stuff. All right. Well, I'm sure there will be more opinions about this trade, but we wanted to touch on it again. Coming up next, though.
It's that time.
Oh, man, Sam has been waiting to talk NASCAR, and we are doing it next. It is Sam and Greg, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And take us with you in the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. It is Sam and Greg on this Groundhog's Day, Sunday morning. Hey, I haven't said this all morning long. Thank you guys for letting me and Sam be a part of your weekend mornings. We can say that now instead of just Sunday mornings.
Right.
We got our Saturdays back. And as we welcome our next guest on, we will start by apologizing, first of all.
Yeah.
Because, it's been a crazy morning. You know, we start a half hour late. We got this big trade in the NBA, and Noel's got sparks coming off her knuckles trying to get all this stuff together and sound and find out who's talking about this. And we didn't get his walk-on music. And, man, we'll get some Toby Keith, you know, How You Like Me Now coming up. That's his walk-on music. But he will be happy to hear, as we play this particular song, last week, because of the open house they had at Atlanta Motor Speedway, we had Brandon Hutchinson come on, Adam, and he wondered aloud, why would Sammy Hagar want 1 foot on the gas and 1 on the brake? listening to the lines of the opening line of the song. So as we welcome Adam Alexander in here, good morning, sir.
How are you guys? Good to be with you.
We are doing well, and listen, geez, for not getting your music on there, but we're going to keep this rolling here. But I don't know where to start. You have got a new moniker.
Yeah, really. That's how we talk with you, right?
This is our man here, and Sam, let me just tell you what this. I don't know. Do you ever go out and look at what's written about you, or you know, online, or like the Wikipedia page? Have you looked at that?
I looked at it? Are you talking about me?
Yeah, you.
No, I have not looked at Wikipedia. I haven't looked there in a while.
Let me tell you what it says about Adam Alexander. First of all,
is this fit to read on air? I assume this is
good.
A family program.
No,
right?
No, man, you ain't a bad dude. Wikipedia says about yourself: is an American television sports announcer. He is currently the play-by-play announcer for NASCAR on the CW's coverage of NASCAR's Infinity Series, NASCAR on Prime Video, and NASCAR on TNT's coverage of the NASCAR Cup Series.
Yeah.
It's the first paragraph written about you. So isn't it nice to know there's some updates out there at that place?
That's good. I don't know who updates that, but I appreciate them taking that. You know, and I got to tell you, full disclosure, you know, I'm not a big social media guy. And I have a daughter who is in college. And she, you know, college, everybody's networking and doing LinkedIn and all the things that you do. And I have all those accounts. But I had, you know, been with Fox forever. So you just never update anything, right? There was never any. And then, you know, we get to the first of the year, and I was real cognizant of what announcements have been made because I didn't want to put something out there that's going to jump the gun before someone properly, you know, does their press release or whatever it is. And so I'm trying to update this stuff, and I'm like, I don't know. And thank goodness my daughter was home from college, and I said, here, you need to help me. I don't even know how to get into the settings to update on Instagram and all of this. So anyway, I think now all that's been taken care of, and I'm glad somebody was able to jump into Wikipedia and get that updated,
yeah,
too.
And there's a nice picture of you there, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely, folks.
Great.
Always great for Adam Alexander to join us here at the start of the NASCAR season. He is social. You can find him at Adam1Alexander. Adam1Alexander.
Thanks to his daughter.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Adam, let's first of all talk about the challenge it may be for NASCAR fans this season with the different places and the different places people can expect to find you in your different roles.
Well, and what I would say to that, Sam, is there are some changes, certainly, and it'll take a little time for everybody to get acclimated, I'm sure, because for the last 10 years, basically the first half of the year, everything's been on the Fox family and networks, and then you made the transition in the second half of the year outside of the Truck Series. Everything was over on NBC, and now that's going to change. The one thing I would say, though, is that, you know, CW's gotten involved with the Xfinity series, and they're going wire to wire. And that's a network that, you know, is open to every household in the country. And so that's something the Xfinity series hasn't had, a broadcast network that's going to broadcast every race, you know, February to November. And so that'll be huge, I think, for the series, for the sport, and for the fans. Once they get used to going there, and they actually carried the last 7 or 8 races in 2024 in conjunction with NBC. NBC produced them, put them out there, and they just aired them on the CW, and that was received really well, and the ratings did, you know, quite well. So I think that was a good start and an indicator of what can be. And now that it's getting going for real in 2025, the Xfinity series will be something that is going to be in a really good spot. And everyone, once they get acclimated to that at Daytona and Atlanta, I think it'll be off and rolling. You know, Prime Video is a new thing, and streaming is new to NASCAR to have Cup races that are streaming. But the one advantage that Prime Video has, before they do their 5 race run in May, starting with the Coke 600 through June, they will be carrying a good majority of the practice and qualifying shows early in the year. So fans will start getting adjusted to that. With the Atlanta race weekend and beyond. And so that, I believe, will really help fans understand where they need to go to get things, because they'll already be watching practice and qualifying there. And then, you know, Turner Sports TNT is a network that's familiar to NASCAR fans because they were there 10 years ago. So I believe that one will be one that's pretty easy to figure out. So there is a lot of new, But I feel like it's all very positive for NASCAR. And once fans get through that initial adjustment, everything will be just fine. And it'll end up being really good for all involved.
Talk about CW and the fact that you're going to take people back to a place as we go back to Bowman Gray tonight. You're going to take people back to The Rock. We haven't seen racing at Rockingham in a while. I know Xfinity Series is going to be there.
Yeah, how about that? You know, they tested over there last week. All the truck and Xfinity teams went over there just to get some track time. They repaved that place. They've done a lot of updates. And, you know, that facility's gone through a couple ownership changes. And I know the goal has always been, let's bring NASCAR back. And they did run a truck weekend there maybe 10 years ago. I don't know exactly when that was that NASCAR went back with the truck series at ARCA. But this just feels different, and I hope the fans come out and embrace it, because the one thing you always fight anytime you go back to some of these venues is, are the fans going to come out? They all want it. They want to, you know, go back in time, so to speak, but are they going to support it once that decision is made? You know, we saw with North Wilkesboro with the All-Star Weekend how much the fans came out and how much they enjoyed that place being restored and kind of taking NASCAR back to its roots. You know, Bowman Gray had a great reception last night, and I'm sure we'll see the – I think Joy said on the broadcast last night that over 40 states entered in the crowd for the Clash tonight at Bowman Gray. And it's a small sample size, and the weather was pretty good. But when they did the test at Rockingham, there were a lot of fans that came out and sat in turn four and watched the team's test. So across the board, it's a very exciting time. And Ben Kennedy, who is you know, one of the heirs in the France family, right, you know, is really done, you know, great at embracing the history of NASCAR. You know, he's also, you know, done a good job of looking into the future. So when you balance Bowman Gray and Mexico City as the two new stops on the Cup schedule this year, it gives you an indication of how open his eyes are to where things need to go and how balanced you need to be.
Adam Alexander joining Sam and Greg, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. All right, so you got Bowman Gray right now. You had the first 3 years of the Clash out in California. Is it possible that NASCAR is going to take a page from the NFL and do like what they're doing with this first race, like the draft, and move it every few years to another location?
You know, there's a lot of talk about that, and we were in some meetings this week, Greg, with NASCAR, and while the Clash didn't come up, what did come up is the playoffs. And, you know, there was a lot of buzz at the end of 2024 about, we got to change the playoff format. This isn't working. We got to change it. You know, Kyle Larson was so good throughout the year, wins six races, doesn't make the championship four. You know, what's going on? We need to fix this. And I err on the side of, and the conversation in the room kind of went to the other day, is we don't really need to change the playoff format as much as we need to be flexible with the races that are in the playoffs, and in particular that championship race. So I don't know, you know, what the focus will be as far as the Clash is concerned. I think it was Chase Elliott that said, you know, I'd like to see this thing run overseas, and maybe that's a way to get into, you know, some new markets and make NASCAR more of a global sport. We're doing that with Mexico City. Could we do that with the Clash, and would that be a way to introduce NASCAR to some new fans? So maybe that's a thought, you know, down the road as you rotate the Clash. But I think the one hot button topic when it comes to schedule and moving venues around is going to be that championship race. And it's unfortunate that conversation is being had, because Phoenix is an awesome venue for a championship race. I mean, they just renovated that place. It's very modern. The camping's wonderful. The weather is good. Phoenix is a championship city. They've hosted all the big events. But, you know, you sometimes compromise the competition, because, as we know, you know, there are courses for horses in NASCAR, and certain guys are really good there. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the competitive edge slides one way. And by moving the championship race year to year, you might start to introduce some other players, you know, to the equation. So we'll see how that works out. But those are some of the things that have been talked about.
Spending time on the WaitForIt.com hotline with Adam Alexander, talking NASCAR. Great to have him for the first time this season, folks. So Chase Elliott looks like he's going to be up front at the Clash tonight. I don't know how much of a difference that makes. But thoughts about that? I'm seeing some different cars over there, seeing Denny Hamlin places. Which teams you think come in doing well? Penske seems like they're always a threat. But you do have, you know, Joe Gibbs is represented there. You do have Hendrick up front coming in. What have you heard?
Well, when you look at recent history in the Clash, because that's the best comparison to what we did at the L.A. Coliseum, probably to what we'll see at Bowman Gray, just because it's a quarter-mile track and there's very little banking, although, you know, there are some differences between the two tracks. Certainly, I think that's probably the best comparison we have. And you look at the last couple of years at the L.A. Coliseum, it did belong to Joe Gibbs Racing. You know, Ty Gibbs was outstanding out there last year and leading a bunch of laps. Denny Hamlin won last year. 2 years ago was Martin Truex Jr. who won at the L.A. Coliseum. And the first ever race there was won by Joey Logano. And you know, when you look, Gibbs, the Gibbs program was pretty good last night. Denny Hamlin was strong. You know, Christopher Bell was good. And then Joey Logano, I think, was someone that surfaced that should be pretty solid as well. The one characteristic that I noticed with some of the drivers at the front last night, where they're pretty good road racers. And so is there a component or something to the rhythm of the way you race this little track and some of the tight turns and the moves you have to make on road courses? I know that probably seems like a little bit of a stretch, but I got that feeling watching some of these drivers and looking who was running well last night that there is a connection there. And someone that I would, you know, put on that list is Chris Buescher. Chris ran really well last night, and he's someone that's a good road racer. And I've got to hit the guy that starts on the pole, you know, Chase Elliott. And you mentioned him, and I know there's a lot of fans listening that probably follow Chase because of his Georgia roots. You know, Hendrick did not perform particularly well at the Clash out in L.A., but Chase last night was really, really good. And the advantage that he has is starting up front, it's hard to pass. Track position is going to be enormous tonight. So there's no doubt he's going to be a player and have a real shot to win this thing.
You know what I'm thinking about?
What's that?
As you talk about Chase Elliott, and we know that he was dealing with an injury a few years ago. We spend our time talking about the other big professional sports and this player, that player coming back, and it's going to take him a year or so to get back into shape the way he played that year before.
Right.
Does this happen in NASCAR regularly where, okay, we're expecting a much better year. You guys are talking about he's looking like the old Chase, and it's been about a year or so removed from his injury. Is that a thing in NASCAR, in driving, where a driver will have an injury and they come back slowly, but yet, you know, you don't think about that same sort of approach to looking at this athlete, because they are athletes. You're going to sit in the car and do what you do. You know what I'm saying, Adam? Is that a thing in NASCAR or driving period where coming off an injury, it might take that driver a year or so to get back, and then they become who they used to be, or at least approach their sport the way they used to?
I would say that's fair. You know, the other connection here, too, could be that when he missed that time 2 years ago, that was year two of this Gen 7 race car. And, you know, you take away all that track time when you can be learning about the car. And there, you know, that's a real deal, right? And so last year he gets another full year behind the wheel, and they won the race at Texas in the spring. And so maybe it's not as much adapting and recovering from the injury as it is just the overall time behind the wheel in this car that, you know, was still somewhat new, you know, to him because of the time that it takes to develop and get comfortable. I don't know. I've not heard that talked about, but that would be one connection that I could make. And I would say this too. You know, I wouldn't get excited about anything really that happens at Bowman Gray because it's unrelatable really to any other venue that we visit throughout 2025. But what I would say is that momentum and confidence is a real thing, and you always want to start ahead as opposed to playing from behind. So if you can go to Bowman Gray, have a good performance, and win, it does help lay the foundation probably for something good, at least in the early portion of the year. But, you know, it's always going to be, you know, Las Vegas probably in March before you really start to get your arms around who's got what and who's got a chance to be good throughout the balance of the year, just because, you know, those early races on the drafting tracks don't really give you an indication of who's going to be good as you look at the long-term future of what's happening throughout the season.
Of course, one of those drafting tracks is here in Atlanta. Now, when do we see you? You know, in the coming weeks, we're going to, because we do have Xfinity races, you know, both in Daytona and here in Atlanta. And when do we start seeing you?
So we'll be fired up starting with Daytona. We'll have that practice show Friday afternoon from Daytona next. So I guess less than 2 weeks now we'll be on the air, and then we'll have the season opener from Daytona International Speedway for the Xfinity Series on CW. And then I'll basically make my home on CW exclusively from February to May. And then in May, we'll begin that summer run with Prime and TNT doing 10 races. And in those weeks, be really busy doing both Cup and Xfinity on either Prime, Turner with the Cup, and then CW with Xfinity. And then we'll wrap up the year back to Xfinity full-time from, you know, August basically through the end of the year. So, but starting out early on, it'll be all Xfinity all the time on CW. And there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. We're going to do some rehearsal stuff tonight with the Clash with some of our folks. So just excited to get going. Tons of anticipation for a very good year.
Yeah. Congratulations, man. We were all really, really happy for you and the role that you're getting a chance to play. And my goodness, we're happy for you to spend some time with us here this morning as we get set for the Clash tonight.
All right, man.
No, I appreciate it so much. Thank you for your support. You guys are always great, and I appreciate you having me on.
As always, Adam, thank you. I mean, we're looking forward to this dude getting in town here, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm going to try to make him meet him this time. and we get his music straight next time, so we apologize for that. Coming up next, going to let you know about some money flying through the air. Got a fresh casting call. You can see him online. Get cast with Greg. Also, 929thegame.com/castingcall. That is up next. And then coming up, a special guest in the 9 o'clock hour.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Mr. Crenshaw Saturday night. That is all coming up. Sports Radio 929 The Game, 929thegame.com. And take us with you in the Odyssey app. Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. It's Sam and Greg on this Sunday morning. It's Groundhog's Day. Yeah, we got some song coming out over there. Oh, wait, is that somewhere else here? No, that's on you. Sam, you don't know how to work the buttons there, huh? What you are listening to, there's a reason for that. Those of you who grew up watching this show wanted to throw this out because it would have been Farrah Fawcett's birthday today.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of those things. I was not the day she died. It was, you know, this is her birthday, so I want to play some Charlie's Angels. But she's that oh yeah when it comes to her passing because of when she died. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I was in L.A.
You were there for that?
Yeah.
I think you told the story, but
yeah.
I had forgotten about it. You were literally
in L.A.
for all that craziness.
Yeah.
Farrah Fawcett died early in the – well, she died earlier in the day. And while there were tributes starting to happen for her,
all of a sudden, stations just started playing Michael Jackson's music.
And a few hours later, Michael Jackson had passed, and that sort of.
Well, that's how people. That's how they kind of put it out there. They just repeating playing his music on the radio.
Yeah. So you know who else would have celebrated a birthday today?
Yep.
And you don't think about the person; you think about what he left as his legacy. Howard Johnson. Like the Howard Johnson.
Okay, okay. Oh, man.
Hotelier or whatever you call him. Hojo's.
That's what some of people will call it, right?
And Papa Bear Hallis, George Hallis, been his birthday today. So just throwing that out there. Sam and Greg, on this Groundhouse Day, now, let me tell you something. We got a new casting call, and for the last couple weeks, and I'm going to continue doing this when it came to this segment, I was talking about how those of you who have a skill set that you think would work on a movie crew, should start finding out where the job opportunities are posted because this state is going to benefit because of the tragedy and the fires that went out and happened out in Los Angeles. So projects are going to have to move someplace, and I would venture a majority of them are going to come here to Georgia. I know that that's the case with a lot of commercials. I visited a couple casting directors over the last few weeks, and you go in there and you can see their whiteboard where they have spots that are going to be casted, and usually in January there's only two or three, and they had seven or eight up on their whiteboard already that were going to be relocating, and they were casting here in Georgia. So, again, if you go past the jobs in front of the camera on the casting call, you will see film industry and voiceover info. And then behind the camera, film and television industry jobs. That's the first one, the first breakdown you see, and I walk you through how to find where they post them on Georgia.org. You'll also find after that official info for the Georgia Department of Labor, that link to the to those folks to get the certificate, and then a couple voiceover connections. Bill Seller and Atlanta Voiceover Studios. All that in case you want to get into voiceover stuff. After that is a list of the casting directors. So you don't have to wait till next week when Sam and I come on and talk about the job opportunities. You can go to their social media pages and see what they're posting every day. And then a generic version of how to submit yourself if you've never done it before. Couldn't be easier. Get your phone, set it up someplace, or have somebody hold it. You get in front of a blank wall. Dress as best as you can to the job opportunities. Case in point. Let's go to a couple of them here. The first one I'm going to start with is Hilton Casting. They're looking for, are you ready for this? Because I know you're a fan of the show, Miss Pat.
Which, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they're casting the Miss Pat show, and they need stand-ins.
That's my folks, man.
Yeah, they need stand-ins.
Really?
But they also need just across-the-board background folks. So this is one of those where you just dress casually. If you want to dress and, you know, take some pictures after coming back from church today, that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
But you could do it in just some casual wear. So that's one.
When are they looking for that?
Period. They're looking for it's going running now. Let me back up here a little bit. I had moved on.
Now
through March 25th.
Okay.
March throughout the month of March, should put it that way, 2025. So that's how they had it written down. I said March 25th. No, the whole month of March.
Okay.
For both of them, stand-ins and for background.
Okay.
Now, Rose Locke is doing scar tissue. They need parents. I don't know how you dress to be a parent, but you got to look like an adult, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that's one. She's also doing one called DTF St. Louis. This is Jason Bateman. He's in town here.
Okay.
So they need an attractive female in shape to portray a kind of sexy, you know, kind of neighbor. That's going to be 24 to 45 for that one. And cops.
Ah.
So.
Okay.
Again, looking official for that. And casting TaylorMade doing Rolling Loud. This is the one where there's a number of outdoor events being done, concerts, things like that. So you'll see the breakdown for what they need dressed like that, 18 to 35 for those. So those are all the latest ones that I have put out. It's slow right now. This is the transition time of year. But given what's going on in California, I think things stalled for a little bit while people are trying to figure out who's going where, who's using this studio, who needs how many sound stages, where are the locations that are being used that they were trying to use out in Los Angeles. Do we have that here in Georgia? Well, we got pretty much every landmass in Georgia, which is what makes this state attractive, other than an iceberg or a desert.
We even got a place down between Columbus and Albany. It looks like the Grand Canyon.
Yes, yeah. You showed me a picture. I had heard about it. I'd never seen the actual picture.
Yeah.
We got a place around the corner here that looks just like the Marietta Square.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
I mean, literally, just like Marietta Square. So you have that going on. So there's a lot of attractiveness to this state. For the film industry to come and bring those projects that can't be shot in California because of the fires. And they need to get them done because, you know, everybody from Netflix to Disney and all them folks, you know, contracts were signed, commitments were made to have projects delivered, and they are expecting them to be delivered. And they got to get them done. So anyway, these jobs are up right now. Get cast with Greg on X and also at 929thegame.com/casting call. Now, speaking of movies, as we transition here, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, like I said, in a minute, I'm going to let you talk about special guests we got coming up. Today was the day that all that craziness surrounding Frank Sinatra's connection with the underworld, I'll just use it that way, started. Today was the day he performed for the first time with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra.
Okay.
Now, this is the story that was chronicled in The Godfather, has been made fun of all in different places. They didn't use his name. Johnny Fontaine was kind of supposed to be, you know, Frank Sinatra. And The Godfather helped him get out of his contract with that band leader so he could be in this movie. And the movie, of course, was From Here to Eternity, which Sinatra made. And I think he got an Academy Award nomination for it. But it was that whole surrounding, that whole sort of situation that was described in a kind of backhanded way in The Godfather. And again, people forget, this dude was the first, he was the first, what do you call it? They called them matinee idols back then. But
yeah.
He was the first one that made ladies weak in the knees. It's from his singing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was that. And the thing about it was, with him, as the stories go, men didn't like him. Because he popped during World War II.
Okay.
And so while they were over there fighting,
yeah,
he's back here singing to the girls.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a problem. And then when the war ended and all this other stuff happened, you know, he you know, became friends with Ava Gardner, and then his family's left over here, and that's a whole story. You can go read out all this. But
well, he was, you know, but he was this versatile guy. He was going, you know, just a singer and looker, but also an actor.
A hoofer too. People forget about that.
Yeah. So he was a triple threat now. You know,
but
you know, those things working.
He, you know, dudes felt a certain way about him because they were over there, you know, fighting for the country. And Frank was back here, zooby-dooby-doo, and all that stuff. So, anyway, he started off with this. But you know what else? Bringing it back to sports that happened on this day. And you look at the career afterwards, and it's crazy. But today was the day of Ben Hogan's car accident.
Oh, wow.
You know what? And what did he win? I don't know how many tournaments after that. But he was laid up for a while, but it was on this date in 49. He got into a serious car accident. And then go look at Ben Hogan's career afterwards. This thing laid him up. The pictures you see him, he's laid out, stretched out in the bed, looking like he was paralyzed. So that happened on this day.
One of the biggest disappointments of living and working in Augusta and covering the Masters of times that I did, that he never came back. Once he got to the point where he couldn't compete. You know, some guys would still come back every year. They, matter of fact, they had to make a restriction on guys who weren't playing rounds of competitive golf, because once you win, you're always invited to come back and play the tournament.
Right.
So you had guys out there taking all day to play a round of golf because they weren't on the tour, but they're a champion. They had a right to come and play. They had to amend that rule at Augusta. But in his case, once he got to the point where he couldn't compete and have a chance to win, he just wouldn't come back. Wouldn't come back for the champion's dinner. Wouldn't come back just to stroll the grounds in his green jacket. Just would not come back. And that was one of the biggest disappointments because of his story. I wanted to meet him. You know, I had a chance to meet and interview Gene Saracen. I had a chance to meet and interview Sam Snead. I didn't get a chance to meet this guy because he just wouldn't come back.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry. You say there's times you say some things and you get me thinking, and along those same lines, not the same, but people talking about Ben Hogan the way they did.
Right.
As we get out of this segment, and again, this has nothing to do with it, but this popped into my head, and I don't know if you saw Dave Chappelle when he did Saturday Night Live a few weeks ago.
Yeah, he did a little stand-up.
And did you hear how he ended, for those folks who did not hear how he ended his stand-up on Saturday? Because Lorne Michaels gives him, you can go out there and smoke, and we're going to give you 15-20 minutes to get out there and do your thing.
In that regard, it was a throwback to the early 70s, late night.
It really was.
That he came out smoking and doing that on TV. I mean, that's the thing. If you watch old late night TV shows, the first things guy did when they came out to sit down and talk with Johnny or Dick Cavett, they lit up.
Cigarette right there.
Right.
He did that. And I guess it's become a thing because Lorne Michaels has asked Dave Chappelle to do that show right after the election.
Okay.
And he's done it for like the last couple times. And he talked about it in this stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not why I'm bringing it up. I'm bringing it up because of the end. And if you've not heard it, especially for folks in Georgia here, I didn't expect it. But, man, you talk about a mic drop. The way he finished up and he incorporated a story about him seeing Jimmy Carter and bumping into Jimmy Carter overseas. And so you just got to go listen to it. The Dave Chappelle stand-up from Saturday Night Live a few weeks ago and how he did that. And I wasn't expecting it. And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That was cool. Anyway, coming up, we're getting into this 9 o'clock hour, and I'll leave it up to you. You want to kind of tease us a little bit who we got coming up? We're going to talk about Atlanta United, too, first.
Absolutely.
We're going to get into that.
We
got a special guest, as you talked about pitchers and catchers a few minutes ago.
We talk about a pitcher. Former Braves pitcher Marvin Freeman is going to join us in the 9 o'clock hour. He's talking about the work he's doing with young people. Special event last night with his partner in crime, if you will, Marquise Grissom, former Brave teammate. And what they're doing really to get young people, especially from the inner city, to take up this game of baseball and to achieve in it. And they got a number of people who are in the pipeline to go and play in the majors right now. They're very proud of. William to talk about that as well as his training, training and working with young people. That's coming up in the hour. That's coming up. Up next, we're going to talk about the five stripes. Down the road in Birmingham, better outcome this week. It's Sam and Greg with the Groundhog.
with the Groundhog
on this Sunday morning on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and 92.9TheGame.com.